Welcome one, welcome all, step right up, step right up, ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 140, Avengers Assemble, is on its way. Howdy, everybody. Portal Game Podcast, the product of a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to Facebook, The Portal, or on Twitter, at Portal Gaming 60. The Portal Gaming Podcast is also a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. How are you doing, everybody? My name is The Brant. I am your host for this episode. And with me is...
Mason.
All right. Mason is stepping into a guest with us here in studio.
Yes.
We're in the back corner of the store. Nice.
It looks like a recording studio, white walls.
We're not quite soundproof. I can hear some bouncing, so
I'm sure they can, too.
Yeah. Well, I can edit some of that out, and this thing's impressive here. This Zoom recorder is really good. So, Mason, you were at our 24-hour event, which I talked about on the last episode, which
yes.
to you hasn't released yet, but I've got it recorded.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah,
I was going to say,
I am a regular listener now, because I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, but I actually really, really like this one.
Nice.
Well,
I like reviewing games, and if people want to hear game reviews, this is the spot. So, but you came to the 24-hour Extra Life Game Day, so just tell us how it was, some of the things you did. You don't have to recap.
So I came at 10, left around 10, because my body cannot handle 24-hour events. Last time I tried to do a 24-hour event at a different store, I nearly got myself kicked out because my body started shutting down.
Yeah. And,
So I will never do that again. I woke up early enough to get to the Terraforming Mars tournament. I was lucky enough to take that one down, won some nice prizes that I believe were supplied by Jillian. First of all, we should certainly say a huge thank you to Jillian, Tracy, and everyone else who chipped in to help run that event. It was phenomenally done, as always. And the thing I won was some store credit that Brian let me use towards a game that I really, really wanted. So, and I will actually be talking about that one whenever we start reviewing games, because it
nice.
Is... Easily working its way into my top 10 of this year, and it is a surprise to me that this game is as good as it is.
Nice. Cool. Awesome. So you were here, you did that tournament, you did some other tournaments. It's a blur for me.
I didn't actually do any other tournaments because I was a little exhausted after the Terraforming Mars tournament and honestly just wanted to game with my friends. So
okay.
I dropped out of those. I got to try out Manhattan Project. Spoilers, it wasn't that good. I don't usually like to review games I don't like very much. So.
The original one?
Yeah, the original Manhattan Project.
It.
Did you like that one?
I like the cleverness of the worker placement.
Yep.
Put them down, pick them back up. There's a decent amount of take that, I think, towards the end.
Yep.
And I wasn't gaga overall. Even the one that everybody really likes, Energy Empire, I wasn't gaga over. Have you played that one?
I have played Energy Empire. I wasn't gaga over it, but like I would put that in the camp of good game I didn't love, as opposed to Manhattan Project, which I put in the camp of I'm not sure it's that great of a game.
Yeah. I'm a little bit like you in terms of I don't mind reviewing a game and saying I didn't like it, or
yeah.
I don't think this is a good game.
Yeah.
But I don't like telling people they shouldn't like it.
Absolutely.
Or they shouldn't think it's a good game. But, I mean, the point of reviewing is to let people know, should I buy it? Should I try it? Should I avoid it? You know, all those kind of things.
Yeah,
so
and that
I try to be honest to that.
This isn't quite the topic of the episode, but there's an internet interesting discourse going on Twitter right now about like reviewers versus that famous Adam Ellis comic, Let People Like Things, that I'm sure you've seen.
Okay,
where he like pinches the person's lip and says let people like things when he's like bad mouthing stuff.
Yeah.
Because people are using that against reviewers now to say like, oh, if you give a bad review, you're not letting people like things.
Right.
So that's always an interesting balance between like making sure people can enjoy the things they enjoy, but also giving your honest opinion.
Yeah. I think I want people to know what I like and don't like, and then they'll know how they align to me and they can go from there.
Exactly.
Right? I think that's key. And then I can say, well, this is why I don't like it. I don't like high levels of interaction in a 6-hour game that I can lose an hour in.
Exactly, yeah.
But if you love that, if that's what it's all about for you, then go for it.
Yeah, and make sure you highlight, it's also helpful to just highlight the things that you did like or think others would like and make sure that a reasonable spotlight shined on that, yeah.
Cool. Well, in that vein, let's start reviewing games.
Yeah, reasonable.
And then everyone can critique our reviews.
Perfect.
So, what have you got to talk about, Mason?
So, the aforementioned game that I was able to win in the tournament, I won a copy of Jaws, the board game.
Okay.
Which I honestly didn't, haven't seen the movie or anything, but once the game came out and there was a website that I reviewed for a little bit that I'm planning on going back to write some small reviews for, There Will Be Games, for anyone interested. Their staff loved the game, like absolutely loved it. So I was like, you know what? I'll give it a shot. So I watched the movie first because I felt that would be a good way to like then get into the game.
Had you not seen the movie?
I've not even seen the movie until this year. Yeah.
Oh no.
Well, I'm not that old.
It's cool.
Yeah, I'm not that old, and I and honestly, like by the time like tons of TV movies were on, like the internet age came up, so I didn't watch like all the reruns of it that I'm sure are out there on AMC and other things.
Yeah.
So I finally even paid the $3 or $4 to rent it to actually watch it. The movie was pretty good. I love I honestly just liked it for the Cape Cod aesthetic, because like the pretty like 1970s beach weather, all that stuff was great. And then had a decent shark movie on top of that. But so I got to play the game, and the game is phenomenal. One of my grail quests was finding a good hidden movement game, and I've not liked hidden movement games that much because there's always a big problem. The person who is doing the hiding takes like 2 seconds to write down, okay, I'm going to do this, this, and this, done. And then the other people, the other person or people have like this huge, massive puzzle to solve on like, okay, well, if you went there, you could have went there. And then the person who's like playing the hider is like waiting forever and ever. Jaws cuts all of that out. It's even as a two-player game with the person who is playing Hooper, Brody, and Quinn. They take a very short amount of time to do their stuff. The shark takes a very short amount of time to do their stuff, and it's just back and forth. Like, I move here, I eat some people. They try and hunt me.
Just your basic, I move here and eat some people.
So they do that. So, but it's so quick, and it is the first hidden movement game that has just nailed it for me. It is the best hidden movement game I've played, and I've played most of the classics. I've played Scotland Yard. I've played Letters from Whitechapel. I've played
Spectre Ops.
I've played Spectre Ops. Did
Fury
not like
of
that.
Dracula.
And I played Fury of Dracula. Thank you. Those are the big ones. And I'm sure people can name some other ones that they think are good. Like I didn't play the sequel to Letters from Whitechapel.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't play like Nuns on the Run or some of the other ones that. But I've played a lot of them, as you can see, and this is the only one that I think has like truly knocked it out of the park.
All right.
Then you play the hidden movement game. It's nice, short, and you flip it over, flip the whole board over, and now you play this really thematic, almost skirmish game, but it's the same kind of game where the shark is trying to do something and the other people are trying to guess where the shark is going. But it's on the boat now. And they're pointing weapons at the shark. And honestly, both halves of the game are amazing. They're very different games, but they're this exact same idea. The shark has some things that are good for it or not as good for it. And the people are trying to guess, well, did it do the not as good thing to try and hide from us, or did it do the good thing and we just go to the beach that it went to, or go to the spot that's better for it to attack? Okay, and it's boiled down to this very simple concept. It is just the perfect bluffing game, hidden movement game, plays in less than an hour, super gorgeous aesthetic. All of the things in the movie are there. The 4th of July could show up as an event. A bunch of other stuff shows up as events that are in the movie, like Hooper's son, I believe it's Hooper, his son can be there in the water that you have to go rescue him.
I think it's Brody's son.
Yes, you're right. Sorry, yeah. Chief Brody, you're right. All of that, like pretty much everything you would want in the movie is there. But unlike, because I remember your review of Die Hard, it doesn't make you replay the movie like Die Hard. Like, get the boots, walk over the glass, do this. It lets you do all the cool stuff in the movie, but in the order that it happens to happen in. But you get to tell your story through the tapestry of that story. it's nearly the perfect movie game. Perfect hidden movement game. Right now, I probably have it at an 8 or 9 out of 10. And this is one I feel like a lot of people are going to pass up thinking it's just some cash in. And boy, is it not.
Well, and if I am correct, is it Prospero Hall?
Oh, yeah, of course.
And but so part of the reason people might pass it up is they're like, wow, I mean, Funkoverse and Bob Ross, Art of Chill and Horrified and Villainous, right? There's all these games that came out. They're all great. Well, but I'm not really interested in Jaws or whatever. So they're, even though they know Prospero Hall has been doing a good job with these games, they might not go to Jaws, or they might decide, oh, Hidden Movie Games, I tried them and they were no good.
Yeah.
Your review is saying to me, hey, if you don't like those, you still got to give this one a try.
Absolutely.
In terms of that, and I know there's an opened copy in the back, so...
Oh, there is an opened copy now?
I may be trying to... Well, you played it with Brian?
Well, that was my copy.
Oh, your copy's in the back.
I was actually trying to get Brian to put a copy in the library because I was going to teach it for a while.
Gotcha.
I'm not quite for the podcast, but I have a little bit of financial problems right now, so I wasn't able to buy a copy right away like I wanted to. But now I will be evangelizing that game.
So at some point I'll have to play that. That sounds awesome. Cool. Have you played... Actually, let's go start with the one you have played, because you were the one who told me to play this. Barrage.
Yes.
All right, so Barrage is a game from Cranio Creations, and this is a game where it's like Europe. It's almost like a steampunk, right? Like, feel to it, and the whole idea is, what if, like, water, if hydroelectric energy had really become a big deal, and now it's the economics of that?
Mm-hmm.
So you have a board where the water is flowing down, and you're trying to build dams, and then... build conduits that'll run to powerhouses, and it's the economics of that. Like, what money could we make off of that in terms of all of those things? So that's kind of the structure of the game. Then it's a worker placement game. So each faction or nation, I guess is what it is, each nation has 12 workers that they can place on the board. It's got a really unique building mechanism where you put your workers on your own board, and then you pick what item you want to build and put it on a little six-space rondelle, and you put the items you need, concrete mixers, and I don't remember what the other one are, builders, we'll just call them builders.
Yeah.
And you put them in that spot, and you twist the spot, and then there are wrenches you can get to move that. So you build whatever it is you want to build immediately, but you don't get the worker or the resources back until, you know, six movement from then or actions from then. And then you're trying to build these dams. You can block other people, so as the water comes down, the height of the dam matters. And then as you upgrade, it's got a little like Terra Mystica Gaia Project mechanism, where as you pull those items off your board, you open up special abilities or income or whatever it might be. And then one of the main actions on the board is to generate electricity. You finally actually generate. So you pull water, run it through a conduit to a powerhouse of yours. And based on which one it is, it'll generate different amounts of water and energy. And then you move up on this energy board, and you can fulfill contracts. So you're trying to collect these contracts and then fulfill these to get a variety of bonuses, victory points, money, other resources. So it's kind of got that classic Euro, you want to take resources early and points late.
Yep.
Then each round, at the end of the round, you're trying to generate six energy so you can kind of get into a bonus scoring and you get money for those things and kind of work your way through. So that's Barrage, kind of the shortened version, because it's a much bigger game that I'm not going to go through what each space does and whatnot. Really interesting game. There do seem to be some production issues that are kind of not a big deal and kind of a big deal. Like, I could definitely play through it being a Euro. But the little water drops are a nightmare.
Yeah, so I have some... So whenever I was introduced to this game as my last game of ConCon, and all throughout the show, I just heard people constantly complaining about the quality of the game and everything.
Yeah.
And then I play, including and especially the Kickstarter Deluxe version, which has the raised boards,
okay,
which I don't think they're doing anymore, but I don't know. Their Kickstarter didn't seem to have... The new relaunch Kickstarter didn't seem to have them, but I don't know for sure. And I sat down and I played this, and everything seemed wonderful to me. Like,
gotcha.
I don't know what the complaints, like, I mean, even the
Were your wheels warped?
The wheels were a little tough to turn.
Okay, so our wheels are, like, brutally warped.
Okay.
Like, you can't turn on two of them. One of them, very specifically, a second one there. And then those water drops are just a bad idea.
They are, but they didn't bother. Like, the thing is like, if I had bought this game, like, if I had bought this game in a store being told it was the second coming of Brass Birmingham, which is, by the way, my opinion on the game, I would have been perfectly fine with the quality, and I would have been perfectly fine with the production and everything. I guess, like, I think it's, like, just the reverse Kickstarter thing, where, like, some people are so excited for this, like, big blowout Kickstarter, and it just disappointed them. Like, if you see a lot of guff about the production and everything, like, yeah, there are little foibles and whatnot, and it's not the best, but you would be throwing the baby out with the bathwater on this one, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't think the production issues are enough to keep me from playing the game or telling somebody to buy the game, but if you are very particular about your production, you might be upset. If you just want to play the game is completely playable.
Yeah.
Even that little Ron Delta, you could just slide your pieces. You don't even need the wheel to push
them. Yeah, pick them up, put them back down.
Right,
yeah.
It's not a major issue in terms of that front. So I have played the game twice, and both have been two-player. And so I think that's my biggest hindrance currently, is it feels like it's a three or four player
game.
I'm
actually surprised you liked it as much as you did playing it only at two. It mm-hmm. just feels like you're using it wrong, like trying to put like trying to put butter in your toaster to warm it up. Like, it just you're not using
they put two player on the box.
I know, for sure I accept that. That's a whole nother, we could do a whole episode on that. And people have. But that's a whole other problem. Marvel Champions should not say four, but I digress. I'm actually kind of happy you like it as much as you do it, even at two, because like, it's you're in for such a treat at three and four. I think it. I don't know why I'd ever go back to Wildcatters, because it uses a lot of the same ideas with just cleaner mechanisms. Worker placement is cleaner than the card manipulation thing.
Okay, yeah.
The whole leeching off of other people's stuff is just done in a slightly more intuitive way. A lot of the other engine building aspects are just more interesting. As far as Brass Birmingham, it's like Brass Birmingham in the sense that, again, you're leeching off of other people's actions, but both of those games are definitely different enough that you could own both. But if I had owned Wildcatters, I'd be selling it.
Okay.
If just to put that into context for people who like to think about games in comparison to others.
Yeah, so this game is really interesting in that it's an engine building game, and I don't know that I saw that as much, and it's reasonably significant. It's not an engine builder in the typical way that a worker placement game is, in that you cannot acquire new workers. Mm-hmm. So instead, you acquire new tiles. I guess this is the advanced mode, but the advanced mode feels simple. Oh, you can use these tiles instead of these. So it's almost like they give you a beginner's mode to learn the game, and then you immediately, game two, jump to the next one. I jumped immediately because I saw the difference. They give you these tiles that you're able to upgrade. And then as you pull things off your board, that's so key. And the order. What was interesting in the game I played, one of the games I played with Larry, was that he was generating a lot of electricity and in turn completing contracts and getting a decent amount of points. So he took a big lead. He did still beat me, but as I pulled those items off my resource and basically just played the engine build for points game, I almost caught up. With one more round, I would have surpassed him in points, which means it was well-timed in the number of rounds, which I've played a bunch of games recently where they're like one round too long.
Yeah.
Not a lot of one round too short, and this one felt just right at five rounds. So it's really neat. I'm definitely interested in trying three and four, and with the way you're saying that, what I've heard people say. Also, the kind of the leech or take that, whatever you want to call the mechanism, I like leech a little bit better in an economic or Euro-style game. It's very clever because you can choose to build your dam like on the one that costs money, and then you know people won't jump in front of you there. But you might not want to spend the money, because what if they don't? And it's really almost like a timing thing. When will somebody try to jump in? And also people can use your conduits, if I remember correctly. So then they mm-hmm. have to give you victory points and money. So you're almost like, oh, I'll build a conduit there. And it's awesome when you start to get contracts that just give you free buildings. Mm-hmm. Those feel really powerful. So
I actually should give the caveat just for ethics sake, I suppose. I didn't actually get to completely finish my game. I think I had to drop out at the last round because I was like, the con crud was hitting me with a baseball bat right at the end. But I had no reason to believe that the last round wouldn't have had any issue.
Definitely not.
I was dead in the water, and I was still having fun. It was just like...
Even the end game scoring is, you kind of know what it is.
Yeah.
It's not crazy, so.
Yep.
In terms of that. Cool, that is Barrage. You had another set of games there.
Yes, I'm just lumping them all together. I believe it was, I don't know what your release order is, but somewhere between one and three podcasts ago, you had reviewed Irish Gauge, which I have shown you.
Yep.
Irish Gauge has kind of opened my eyes to the world of Winsome Games, a very strange company that gives out, by the company's own admission, worse than prototype quality games, that is focused on just the gameplay, where they develop those games for several years before releasing them. Irish Gauge being one of the most recent ones that have gotten a lot of love. Chicago Express is one I've been playing a decent amount, thankfully lent to me by Brandt, so I could try that, hoping to win it at an auction this weekend, because I did like it a decent amount. It is a lot like Irish Gauge, but you cut out the luck, and it has a bit more timing in calling its actions. You will see the DNA is shared pretty considerably between those two games, and I found it really interesting. I think it's a great case study in how luck really does improve some games, because I do think Irish Gauge is better for that luck with the drawing of dividend cubes. Creates a little more variation, a little more uncertainty. Right. However, Chicago Express is amazing in the fact that it's less than an hour, it is no luck whatsoever, and probably has some of more strategy articles written about it on BoardGameGeek than almost any other game of its kind, because every move that you make is going to change what move the person to your left should make. You make one move and it just ripples throughout the game. And I don't mean like a move like, oh, I decided to build her. I mean, you bid $14 and then the next person decides to raise the bid that by one, that'll change the whole game. Because now they have one less dollar to put another thing up for auction. They'll have a little less money than you. The teeniest thing, $1 difference can completely change the game. And I've been kind of fascinated by these, but not sure if they're my absolute favorite kind of game, but there is really nothing like them. So if anything that I said about Chicago Express sounded interesting, I definitely recommend checking it out, because you could probably find it on clearance pretty easily. I also got to try Kansas Pacific, which I don't believe you tried. And that one is, again, very similar in DNA to those, except the big problem with that is it went on for about two and a half hours, so it loses a bit of that magic in terms of being able to iterate on it over and over again and learn from your mistakes. Because it's like you sit down and you like get done with this no luck game and you're like, oh, I know I made 100 mistakes, but I can't really correct for them for next time because I have to put the kids to bed.
Well, and the interesting part I wanted to mention was that, you know, with Capstone releasing Irish Gauge, that's the beginning of their Iron Rails series.
Yeah.
So they're going to start releasing what I presume are all Winsome games in that series. I don't remember exactly what their plan is.
I think that was the stated goal. I'm hoping against hope that sooner rather than later we get Iberian Gauge, because I got to watch Heavy Cardboard's run through of the Winsome components, and that game looks unbelievably cool. I will be banging that drum very hard once I get the copy, and I will be pre-ordering that game just based off of that playthrough.
Nice.
But the other thing I will add is not just these are getting licensed out even faster than that, because Rio Grande had announced that they have one, they have announced one or two, I think, and then they Baltimore Golf Mobile in Ohio, I think, it's so hard to remember these names, which is considered one of his best, and then two or three others that they haven't announced the names of yet, but these are coming, it sounds like they're coming pretty fast now that John has a little more time on his hands, now that he's not actually publishing or printing these copies, because the last set was this year. So he's done officially making Essen sets, is what they're called. He makes a big batch of them, charges $150 for these games that look like garbage, but play like heaven.
That's definitely a strong following for those. So yeah, that'll be interesting and to see. Actually, it's ironic that you said the thing about putting the kids to bed, because Chicago Express is the one that I had set up and taught, and we were round in, And then next thing I knew, I was called to go put the kids to bed.
Exactly.
But it wasn't for the length of the game. Hey, speaking of Avengers Assemble, somebody just walked in. Who's this here?
How's it going? It's Brian.
Awesome. Sit down, Brian. You want to be on the episode?
Oh, now it's... Sure.
Cool. Brian's here, too, because we're at the portal. So
no prep, though.
He's going to jump in. That's okay. We're reviewing one more game, and then we're doing all this. So you can talk with us on that. All right. So, we'll recap for Brian. So, we talked about 24-hour event, and then Mason reviewed Jaws. And I said there's an open copy in the back, but he said that's his copy. So, I was like,
all right. I thumbs up under the table, so that didn't help either. You or the audience.
Talked about Barrage, and then the Winsome games that he's been playing, all those train ones. And now I'm going to talk about what is definitely in my top 10 of the year, will be in my top 10 of the year, Paladins of the West Kingdom.
Oh, okay.
Love this game. Paladins of West Kingdom. You've played it, Brian, because we played it the first time together. Have you played Paladins of the West Kingdom?
I have not.
All right. So it feels like a lot to explain Paladins of the West Kingdom, even though once you get started, it's not too bad, which kind of reminds me of Tapestry, which has been my constant comparison between these two, even though somewhat they're not alike. But so what's happening is you play over a series of rounds, I want to say seven in Paladins of the West Kingdom to get the most points. And the phase is going to start where you draft meeple. No, sorry, you draw three cards off of your deck, and you pick one paladin. Then you put one of those cards on the bottom of your deck and one on the top of your deck. So you're planning for next turn. That paladin will give you a special ability. Basically, you break a rule for that round, and you get two meeples. The meeples represent villagers and hunters and gatherers and criminals and I can't remember what else, priests and all sorts of stuff. But they're basically different colors. And then you draft from a line where you can collect four different meeples. You draft a card, and now, like, the round starts. So there's all that preset for the round. Get these, basically, six meeples, plus you could hold some over. You might have some special abilities. And now you spend them on your board. You have a personal worker placement board, which always makes me struggle to say that's a worker placement game when there's no interaction in the worker placement. It's your own, so it feels like action selection, but anyway. So you place these on the board, and you are trying to get various things. So you're trying to get upgrades where you can take little buildings kind of side style off to make one thing cheaper and put it down somewhere else to make that easier to do. So you're scoring points and getting bonuses and making another action easier to do. Meanwhile, you're manipulating this board. You're trying to build those buildings to build up your town. You're trying to get your monks to go out and convert people. I don't know. Send throughout the land. I mean, it's paladins, so it's got a religious element to it. And then you're trying to get your strongholds out in the land. So as you go and sack things, you're putting those out there. And then there's various villagers and outsiders, outcasts, whatever they are, outsiders. Yeah. And you're bringing those in, and you can fight them or you can convert them. And all these mechanisms for doing all of these things. And I just really like that. It can lead to some AP. So my biggest complaint, which I haven't actually played a four-player game, but I've seen four-player
you've experienced it in proxy.
And just that AP and that time to do that and that pre-plan, it's begging you to pre-plan and then go spend all of these, leads to a longer game, whereas it's a phenomenal game at two. I just love it at two, and I don't find the interaction to be essential that I need three or four people. Kind of opposite of what we were talking about with Barrage, where it seems like it's just asking you to play at three and four. This one doesn't seem to matter. So I just really, really like it. I've been comparing that and Tapestry because they feel the same to me. Like, collect these resources, then figure out throughout that round how to spend them.
Yeah.
And there's not high levels of interaction, but there's a board you're moving around. But it definitely outshines Tapestry for me. I don't know why I have to compare those two.
Well, I mean, it's also like in Tapestry and like in the two, it's kind of like resources or the meeples in this case for paladins. Like, they don't matter at all until they matter 100%, like until they completely matter.
That's a great point.
So it's like you have to path out your whole turn in a sense and decide, like, you know, where you're paying things and how you're going to end up paying things after you trigger, like, one thing to the next and all that sort of stuff. So kind of I feel like the same way in that sense where it's like, you know, just it's easier if you're just kind of experience, like, learning it or figuring out how to go through. Just I think you just need to be a little bit more accepting of, oh, I should have just, it would make no sense for me to use this resource here. Why don't you just go back and kind of, you know, adjust that, assuming it doesn't, like, completely affect what other people have been doing. So, but yeah, I like both of them a lot.
Is it your favorite of both series? Or you just what? Don't remember? Between of, Raiders,
I think
Ship
Raiders
Breaks,
is still kind of, with the Breaks. Expansions, it's kind of up there. But Raiders, it's been a little while since I played Raiders. But
have you played any of them?
I've played both Raiders and Architects, and I've enjoyed both a decent amount. And I actually kind of get the... I mean, I feel like now that you put comparing it to Tapestry, I do kind of get the comparison of both of those designers' design styles, because both of them like to do like very simple mechanisms, tweaking them just a little bit, like just next-step games. On top of it, they both put a smattering of what feel to be somewhat unbalanced cards into the mix, which honestly I feel like frustrate at least me and like a non-zero number of people I've played with, but also help make the game interesting. But it's just like, this just feels not the smoothest whenever you start playing those cards. Tapestry never felt super smooth with the cards. Viticulture never felt super smooth. And Architects more than Raiders, again, felt like pretty wobbly in terms of, like, you play this card, you're like, wow, that's a card.
Yeah, you're intriguing me because Paladins has the draw three, pick one, put one for next turn, put one on the bottom. So it feels like it has that. I've always played Viticulture. Sorry. Originally, I didn't play Viticulture, and now I always play draw two, keep one.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if putting that into the Tapestry cards would be a reasonable idea for Tapestry. It's weird to say that twice.
Yeah,
draw two when you get a Tapestry card and discard one. I don't know if it's... I mean, there's a lot of ways to draw Tapestry cards, so you get a few more to select from usually.
Are those are hugely swingy?
The like, Tapestry card? Yeah. They've always felt like it. The scores sure show it, because like the scores I've always played with like people who I consider to be like fairly close in skill level. The few times I played, and the scores have always been like just blowout central. Like
okay.
For the difference between first and last, I think I've either played two or three times have been like 150 points
Between first and last.
Yeah,
but then like we
at
played
least,
a four
least.
Player.
At least.
And like three of the top, like the three of us at the top were pretty close,
points.
But then one person was just completely, you know, like out of it. So I wonder if maybe that was kind of.
Was that the game with Larry that I walked? Because there was a game that I walked by with Larry where like he was still at the first age while everyone else was passing. I was like, I just whispered under my breath, I'm like, Larry won. Like, because that was the other issue that I've had where it seemed like if you're able to just lag, you can just. Crush it because you're getting so many more actions than the other players.
Yeah, he won till he scored the correct amount of points.
Yeah,
then he lost.
He scored as he uncovered points from his board, he scored them immediately and at the end of the round.
Oh.
So he scored literally 24 too many points and beat me by 23 and lost to me by 1 point. And I actually did the reverse. I sped through to get all those bonus resources for going faster than the other players.
Is that how Larry wins most games? He's not here.
We're pretty convinced.
If he's not here, we can say
convinced.
Anything.
Yeah, he just takes points no matter what.
Okay, cool.
In that case, he had been up for 36 hours and was pretty out of it.
Yeah, no. Does he listen to the podcast?
Because No. Nobody listens to this podcast. Just kidding. Cool. Well, anyway, that's Paladins of West Kingdom. I really, really enjoy the game. We went off into Tapestry.
Yeah.
But we'll come back. And that is Garfield Games. It's one of my favorites of the year. So, speaking of favorites of the year, a big game just released in time for the 24-hour event, and we hinted at it with the title of the episode, which is Avengers Assemble, and so we have assembled, apparently we are Avengers here, and we want to talk about the Marvel Champions card game, the new LCG from Fantasy Flight Games. Mason, you want to tell us about the game?
Yeah, so Marvel Champions follows pretty well in the lineage of the previous two Marvel cooperative LCGs. It still has Nate French as the designer. I think Michael Boggs and Caleb Grace are new to the cooperative team.
Caleb Grace, I know, is in Lord of the Rings.
Oh, he is? Okay.
I'm not sure if he did
Caleb. I'm sure he listens. And... It feels, in my opinion, a little more like just a much more improved in terms of ease of flow of Lord of the Rings, but it doesn't. But it's not quite as comparable to Arkham Horror because the story elements, at least for the base set, aren't nearly as strong. It's much more of that cooperative puzzle that people are looking for, as opposed to like we're going to go through a story and just use cards as the medium. You all take your turns and the enemy whaps you a bunch through like long threaded turns that you have to follow, and you probably still want to use a checklist even after your fifth play to make sure you followed every step. But the thing that makes it so much smoother is in order to bring out that superhero vibe, they introduced a mechanism where you pay for cards with other cards. So you just have this hand of cards. It feels like a Swiss Army knife. You got to do all the powerful things you want because anything you can play is just paid for with cards out of your hand. So you're never stuck getting, like, you never have to wait to play the Avengers Mansion if you want to. If you want to, just pay for it. But that's going to probably take up your turn because it's an expensive card. And it feels a lot more empowering than Lord of the Rings did. And as I said, the flow feels a lot better. And I should probably stop talking because I've repeated myself on one or two things now. So I will throw it back to...
Yeah, so, you know, it's an LCG, so there's deck building in the game. What happens is there's five heroes in the box. So they've got She-Hulk, Spider-Man, Captain Marvel, Iron Man, and Black Panther. Everyone's whispering it to me. Thank you. They've got those five heroes, and then four aspects. So the aspects are kind of like your color pool from Magic, I suppose, but you can't cross the streams. So you've got protection, justice, aggression, and leadership is the fourth one. And so you basically, right now it feels a little bit like Smash Up. I want Spider-Man and aggression, shuffle them together. And there's some neutral cards. And there's not a lot of deck building. And then there's three villains in there. So there's Ultron, Claw, and Rhino. So my initial worry with the game was that this is a lot, but it wasn't going to be enough. It was going to get played through pretty quick and not feel like a lot. And then I heard that there's difficulty levels to the villain. So each villain can be played in two different difficulty levels, as well as you shuffle different cards into the villain's deck. And so I was kind of like, oh, how will this play out? And I've actually been surprised. I just was listening to Sporadically Bored, and Dan Hughes was saying how he felt like there wasn't enough variety for him, and the variety has been the part that I've been most pleased with, that I'm excited to play Justice Spider-Man and then Protection Spider-Man, and I'm impressed that, like, Claw gets more difficult, or I could shuffle these cards in instead of these, and it feels different. I even think solo versus two-player feels different, you know, in terms of all of that. So the variety has really been an exciting part of it to me. Now, no doubt deck building will be way better when, you know, there's a pool of 100 cards and I'm trying to narrow that down to 25 that I want to put in my deck, or even bigger than that. But that's kind of been my big initial impression.
No, and it's only a matter of time before Fantasy Flight does does that, right? And drops all the expansion stuff out there.
Buckshot of content.
But yeah, I mean, I think I'm still kind of in that, like, it's tough because I know Lord of the Rings is difficult to get to the table because of the vast amount of stuff that there is, at least for me, trying to go through and reorganize and figure out, you know, what I'm hopping back into.
Right.
Like, in some ways, it's good to kind of start off on square one again, but, you know, I guess it's just because there's so much Marvel stuff out there in mainstream media and stuff like that, like, you want everything, right?
Right.
So you're kind of itching for more, which is a good problem in a sense with, you know, hopefully it gets that support behind it and people, you know, continue to play it and, you know, just hopefully the community loves it as well. That's the one thing, right?
Yeah. Cool. So. There is one correction I want to make. Brant said that there were four aspects in the games. There's actually three and an optional hard mode called Playing with Protection. But we can cover that when we get to the game balance. So,
well, go ahead. So give us some of your pros and or cons.
So I've gotten to play with only four of the heroes and all of the aspects by now. And using some of the theory I've gathered from listening to some people who take the Arkham game fairly seriously, I have some opinions on the aspects. The two best aspects are probably either leadership or aggression. Aggression, you can think of as winning the game, because your goal for at least this, all the scenarios of the base box is to get the enemy down to zero health. You win then. So aggression's probably going to be the best, because all of its cards say, get you closer to winning the game. Yeah. Leadership is a weird one, because it doesn't really match with any of the things that the other side is doing against you. It's just putting stuff into play. But all of those cards have seemed like you get to keep reusing them. They seem very powerful. I feel like leadership and aggression are going to be going back and forth between being the best. Mm-hmm. Justice is going to be, unless some of the things change in terms of the villains you fight, justice is probably going to lag a little bit behind, because it is like just not losing the game. All it's doing is keeping you from losing, and you shouldn't be devoting your whole game to not losing, because eventually if you do that, you're going to run out of cards that'll keep you from losing and you'll lose. And the last one is protection, and the rate at which protection helps you in terms of defending against attacks just feels weak. You're not, it doesn't feel like you're getting enough bang for your buck. You're using your entire hero activation. You usually get to activate your hero on average only once per turn, and using that to just prevent some damage is anemic, and it doesn't seem like the card, it doesn't seem like the green aspect is doing enough to make that good. All of the cards are costed about as efficiently as the cards that are actually winning you the game, and all they're doing is just anemically keeping you alive until eventually you die. And this is mostly focused from a solo perspective, but I imagine protection gets a little bit better when you get to stand in front of bullets for other players. But at least for solo and two-player, protection does seem to be lagging behind a little bit.
Yeah, I definitely agree with your assessments on those. Justice feels a little more like the jack of all trades to me than the keeping you from... Like, because it definitely does a lot of remove from the scheme, which, great job saying, the goal is to take the villain down to zero health twice, there's two stages, and keep them from scheming their master plan, which could be one, two, or three stages.
For now, yes.
So, yeah, so good call on that. I didn't even mention that piece. So there's that piece. And I agree with you about protection. It definitely seems toughest in solo, and it feels underpowered. I get the sense that it's a little bit like a blue magic deck, where it's trying to control... And we haven't necessarily figured out those pieces, all of that. It feels like the one where you need to be the most clever. It might be more that you need to be the most lucky right now in terms of what you draw and all of that. But I think it's one where you really need to remember to protect for other people and play cards for other people and kind of be that piece. I have put together a protection Spider-Man deck with his 3 defense that I think is going to work pretty well. So I'm excited to try that. And Larry was excited for protection She-Hulk, because She-Hulk can do damage back at like 3, 4, 5. So as she gets hit, she does damage back. And as she takes damage, she plays cards where she does more damage, having taken wounds. So sound like interesting ways to go about it. So it'll be interesting to see how the characters tie in with the other pieces. So some other parts that I think are huge pros, I love the way they handle some of the things. You have some side cards. Every character comes with an obligation that gets shuffled in that can come up at any time. Oh my gosh, you're in the middle of fighting this villain, but Aunt May is at home sick, right? Or dying, whatever it would be. You got to worry about that. And then you got like your arch nemesis who can come out. That's just really clever in how they do that. And then I think one of the best parts is they make it feel like I am a superhero, because pretty much they always let you say, yes, you can do that. And that was a great idea. So once per turn, you can flip your card from your alter ego, Peter Parker, to Spider-Man. I don't only play Spider-Man. I'm just referencing him. I've actually only been playing Spider-Man recently. I was mostly playing Captain Marvel. But you can flip, and you get to do the action on both sides of the card, and you don't exhaust to do the action, so you can still fight or thwart or defend. That's great. Like, it's great to be able to tell players, yes, you can do that. You can take actions during other people's turns, so that feels a lot more team-oriented, those kind of things. So I just really find those to be huge pros in my book. That's really been quite fun.
Yeah, I mean, I really like just playing through, trying to kind of dig through your deck, like just use cards at your pace, like whatever pace you need to. I don't know. I guess I just like cycling through trying to find certain things. I guess I mostly recently played Black Panther, where it's kind of like he's setting up for Wakanda Forever, like a specific card. So it's kind of like you try to play through your hand to redraw. Obviously, like once you get through your deck, there is a little bit of a negative, but it feels like you're just trying to kind of cycle until you get the right combination of cards to kind of to do what you're trying to set yourself up for, which is just a neat way to play through, you know.
Speaking of needing to set up, would y'all be interested in running through our perceived power levels for the second half of the smashing up, which is the heroes themselves?
Absolutely.
So do you want me to start with mine, or do you want to give yours?
No, I definitely want to hear yours and then comment on them.
So I've only played with four of them, and I have a guess on the fifth based off of what other people have said. So I have played with Spider-Man, Captain Marvel, She-Hulk, and Black Panther. She-Hulk and Captain Marvel I put as the two best. They seem to be incredibly powerful. The rate on She-Hulk's cards for hitting the other person is very high. And on top of it, because she's a lawyer on her other side, she actually gets to thwart at pretty efficient rates going that way. So she can just handle both sides. Again, I'm giving a little bit of a review from the solo end, so forgive me on that.
No, fine.
And Captain Marvel, again, just the rate on all of her stuff is just very, very good. Like, she gets to draw on average two cards a turn if she flips, because she gets to draw one on one side, one on the other. And pro tip for people starting the game, drawing a card is one of the best things you can do, because at worst it's just a resource.
Right.
That's something that may take a little bit for people to get used to, because they're like, oh, I can't pay for this card. No, just use it as a resource then.
Yeah.
So those are two of the best. Spider-Man just feels very similar in terms of handling both sides of the game very well, very efficiently, but felt a little bit below the other two. Although I did mostly play him with Justice, which, if you remember what I said about that, might have been holding him back, at least in my opinion. Black Panther feels atrocious in single player. You have to like build up these combos. You have to build up these combos and work so hard to do that just to get him up to the power level that like She-Hulk has just from her opening hand, it felt like. And he seems so cool too. He has these four cards that you get a trigger every time you play a Wakanda Forever event. He had Shuri's there, City of Wakanda's there, all the sweetest cards. Easily one of the very best Marvel movies too. But I don't think they did his character justice. But again, I was playing him with protection, so I'm going to be revisiting him.
Yeah.
But I couldn't be single player with Black Panther protection. I could not beat Rhino basic level solo.
Who is it?
Black Panther with a protection aspect. I couldn't beat Rhino at the basic level, and I tried it like three times.
I've had the same struggles with Black Panther, and then Brian played last night as Black Panther and
it
did
was
very,
fun.
Very
yeah,
well.
Yeah, but it was, I mean, with three of us, it was a little easier to just kind of accept what I was doing when I was doing it. I guess I was also, I had like three cards out that comboed with Wakanda Forever, and, you know, like each turn I was typically able to play one of those. One turn I played three Wakanda Forevers, which was just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I ended up doing a ton of damage. Like, it was, I guess it's just kind of waiting to that point. I know even, like, She-Hulk, it felt like she was there when I was playing with, like, another three-player game. She was just kind of existing until, hopefully, this one turn payoff did okay. And even then, I feel like when we were playing with that group, Captain Marvel was just better, like, at a steadier pace.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you think Captain Marvel's even better than She-Hulk? Like, cuz I couldn't differentiate the strength level between the two.
Yeah, from that one play it felt like it, but I don't know, solo is probably a completely different ball game where you're trying to balance everything. But it felt like, I guess it was mostly just me observing what Captain Marvel was doing without hopping into that role, you know, but it felt like Captain Marvel was just like steady and really powerful like throughout. So
okay. And then finally, eagle-eared listeners probably can discern that Iron Man is the one I haven't tried. I feel like he's going to be only slightly better than Black Panther, especially for Solo, because it looks like he's going to require a lot of time to set up, which is not something you're necessarily afforded, especially in the Rhino scenario, because in the Rhino scenario, you lose as soon as Seven Scheme hits. And I'm just not sure you're going to realistically have the time to do that.
Yeah.
But I'm super excited to try him out.
So I played Iron Man solo, and I drew through my deck 3 times because he draws through cards. He's got that futurist ability. The key with him is you are building up. You can jump to the other side and thwart for 2, which is pretty awesome. Your hand draw is 1 plus the tech cards that you have in play, which is what you're referencing initially. So I find very much turn 1, I almost never flip,
yeah,
which is not true for any of the other heroes. Pretty much all the other ones I want to flip.
Yep.
So you're sitting on that side trying to prevent the scheming, but once he gets that stuff going, unlike Black Panther waiting for Wakanda forever, he's just doing everything every turn. He can get rid of scheme. He can single damage enemies, take out those Tufts with the things. And then you got the big blast card, the repulsor blast or whatever it is, which is like Captain Marvel's energy release.
Okay.
They're very similar. So it feels like it's not going to work, and it's going to be a slow build-up. And by turn 3, if you're not there, then yeah, you're probably sunk. But by turn 3, you feel pretty powerful.
That's amazing.
Okay. And you can add a lot. He could get up to like 17 health. So I actually played Protection Iron Man solo. I'd be really interested to hear your opinion on that. Not liking Protection and expecting Iron Man not to be so good. I'd like to see how that plays. I'm not even challenging you.
Yeah.
I'm saying I thought it was pretty interesting. But it was a lot of just prevent that, stop that, hold that scheme down till I can just become so powerful that I get through my deck and just start doing 10 damage at a time on a turn, you know? It was quite fun. It was really neat. For me, I don't know in terms of like power level. Captain Marvel has been my favorite by far. She's just, what do I say? Melt face? Yes. She just.
When do you say that?
So she's just awesome to melt face. I actually realized I haven't played She-Hulk yet. Black Panther, the problem I had was every time I played Black Panther, I started with the initial card, drew my Wakanda Forevers, and didn't draw Shuri or the tech. And then drew the villain card that says you got to get rid of an upgrade. And it's the only upgrade I have in play. So now I have Wakanda Forevers. I can't do anything with them. They become resources, but it was like, well, that's the whole point. So he's just so dependent on that. It feels like he needs one other card that's like Shuri's. It feels like the City of Wakanda shouldn't say draw 2 cards. It should say go grab a tech.
Or it should say that you can use it on your hero side at least. You can only use it on your alter ego side. His alter ego side doesn't do anything. His alter ego side doesn't have a power. Like so, it feels like every time I'm looking for text that needs to be there, it's not there.
But I have heard that Black Panther leadership multiplayer is really, really good.
Oh, sweet.
So I think that might be, you know.
Is that what I use? I think so.
I think so. Yeah, that one seems like a really good matchup. Spider-Man is jumping up there. I'm getting really excited to play Spider-Man. I'm excited for this Spidey protection that I built at lunch today and haven't played yet. So we shall see in terms of that. But anyway, this is another one of my favorite games of this year. I'm pretty sure that this is number 2. So everybody knows Fleet the Dice Game.
Yeah.
And I don't think I like this better, although in some sense this will have longer legs than Fleet the Dice Game. I don't see myself stopping playing Fleet the Dice Game, but I have now taught and played a game. Like, I don't know how many games of Fleet I've played. I've probably played like 40 to 50. But number of people I've taught and people play, it's like 100 something. Whereas this, as they add more stuff, Fleet's not going to add more stuff. So, you know, in longevity. But this game's awesome. I love it.
The other thing that I find interesting, you talk about this being your game of the year. Part of me wants to just make this my game of next year when it's actually going to get to come into really? Its own. Yeah. Because it's really, like, they always do that. I mean, this is, I have a few notes about, like, the product design of this. This is, like, the best designed product of this. their LCG so far. Like, a lot of their LCGs would require you to buy multiple core sets. They would make it hard to get into because they wouldn't have good starter decks that were easy to get into. That fixed that. Everything about this walked you through the game very well. I have a few complaints because the rules reference is one of the weaker ones that I've seen. I bang the drum pretty hard for Fantasy Flight's rules reference guides because they really fix what's wrong with their style of game. It's really hard to get into their games that you can find everything. You can't really find everything in this. I've already had to ask two or three questions on Board Game Geek, and at least one of them has still not had a super satisfying answer. And they've already needed to update the FAQ, and I imagine they'll need to keep doing that even just for the core set, which feels like a swing and a miss to me.
Yeah. It's pretty standard for card games. I'm not trying to let them off the hook. Fantasy Flight is also notorious for needing FAQs pretty quickly, so there's that piece. But card games, there's just so much interaction that even through playtesting, they don't find all those.
Yeah, I'm spoiled by Magic because Magic has a staff of like 40 to 100 people bare minimum, and that is
good point.
Yeah, and so
that's going to be its own beast.
Yeah, and like I always hold it to Magic standard because I've played Magic so long, and yeah, you're probably right. That isn't fair. One thing I do, I imagine you're going to want to wrap up pretty soon, one thing I did want to talk about was what we think of the way they're distributing the cards. From your angle, someone who has gotten into some but not all of the Fantasy Flight games, I've gotten into most of the Fantasy Flight games, at least for a little bit, and as someone who's running a store who's going to have to stock the darn things, I'd love to hear. I am curious about your angles on how they're doing these laid out.
Yeah, I'm intrigued because it seems exciting to get it. So they're going to release hero packs, they're going to release scenario packs, which are villain packs, and they're going to release some kind of campaign that we don't really know much about.
Yep.
The hero and villain packs we do know something about. I'll actually give a shout out to Team Covenant, which is an awesome YouTube channel. They get all this stuff. They have it all ahead of time. They actually even make tokens you can order through them, but you should check out them. They've been covering it every Monday for like 5-6 hours. So they've been doing a ton. So they've seen some of that. So it's interesting to me because it's exciting to get a new hero, but to not have a new villain to fight. So Lord of the Rings and Arkham always release some new cards, usually with a new character you could play, plus a new scenario. So every month you had a new scenario you could be playing. Mm-hmm. But this one, I don't know if we're going to wait every other month for a new villain to fight. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays. And we don't know anything about this campaign pack. Is it really cool? Is it trying to add a lot of story and make it fight to fight to fight a little bit bigger thing? Because I don't actually mind the lack of story. I feel like the story is the battle and the way they're trying to do that. And I actually found that with Arkham, I was just like, I guess I finished, but I don't know if that's a win or a loss. So I don't know, but I am sad that it sounded like the first pack is going to be delayed till after Christmas.
Oh, it did get delayed. Their website's still saying for both of the packs Q4. So my understanding is Green Goblin's going to be it is probably delayed. But if you hear bad news, it's probably true. If you hear good news, it's probably 50% to be true. I think the Green Goblin pack, if I remember correctly, is coming first.
Okay.
So you will get your villains first. I was interested to hear you say that you were like a little sad about the villains, because I feel like, at least from my perspective, I'm more excited about getting more player cards, and I don't...
Okay, for the deck building,
And as far as that goes, I love that they split them, though, because the issue was is every time you would buy one of those packs, you would always be a little sad because you'd be expecting I got a whole pack of player cards, with Netrunner you get a whole pack of player cards, but with this it's half player cards, so it felt like you only got like half a month's worth of content, if even that. So splitting them up, it's going to be really exciting. They're also making them decks now. You buy Captain America. Almost everyone who buys them is probably going to just shuffle up that deck and play to start.
Yeah,
just learn all the cards, get that out of the way. And yeah, they learned a lot, I think, about how these should be run. And I am really excited to see how these, what seem to be nothing but improvements, are implemented. And the amount of content we're getting with Green Goblin seems incredible, too. They are charging $5 more MSRP than previously, as I'm sure you're all too aware, Brian, but
all of the packs or the Green Goblin,
the scenario packs.
Those are 20, and the Captain Marvel one will be 15.
Miss Marvel, sorry, yeah, Miss Marvel and Captain America will be 15. Captain Marvel's already in the.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a little confusing that they have Captain Marvel in the set and then Captain America coming and Miss Marvel. Yeah, it may not have been the best branding choice, but I digress.
Yeah, I don't know retail wise. You know, I mean, you're thinking back to KeyForge and some of those things that have picked up and come and gone.
Well, I mean, the LCG model is a little bit exhaustive when, you know, like when a ton of stuff is coming out. Like it does feel like every week there's like a new pack of something, whatever it is. And it is a little exhaustive. I know the tough thing is always gauging like what our community base is looking like how strong that is, right? So eventually we get to a point where we kind of have a solid couple releases where we know like, you know, however many packs, like that's kind of locked in and that's what we'll be selling, right? But then I think it's draining for consumers as well, where at a certain point something might fall off the cliff and all of a sudden we're stuck with whatever we had been running, like our running rate on LCGs, just because, you know, we had kept a number consistent for a while, and then all of a sudden we have to catch up and realize, okay, now this is really, you know, heading down the cycle. But I think some of that too is just being a little more on top of it and kind of knowing like what those expectations are, and if there is some play like an LCG night
Tuesdays.
Yeah, so once that's kind of going, that at least should give us a stronger pulse on how the community is doing with it and what they're looking for.
Oh, sorry.
So I was just going to say, it does strike me that, you know, when Arkham releases, and I'm not the biggest Arkham fan in terms of theme, the Zealot's Garden Path of Zen has released this week. And like, people are like, okay, that's the new Arkham. So they're excited. Versus Captain America is the name of the pack. That seems to hold more weight to me, just in terms of name.
I would, right?
Captain America came out. Miss Marvel came out.
Green Goblin.
Groot and Rocket came out. People can know these names. They don't need to give the packs like names of things to try to remember. So it feels like it won't be as exhaustive of like, oh, did you know that the boom, right, Iron Spider pack came out? You know what I mean? Like that kind
of
thing.
It does feel more accessible, right. I guess. That's the thing. But I know Arkham was one, like, that's been our most consistent LCG for a while now. Probably because of the strength of like the community within. You know, a ton of people just play it on a regular basis. And, you know, like this one has felt steady. Obviously, every now and then there might be a pack that we order too much of or something like that. But it always felt like with the initial launch, like since the initial launch, it was always like we order some, but it was not enough. Yeah. And we'd have to restock until we got to that healthy point of like, this is where we'll need to be to kind of have one or two left at the end of the the week.
But can you even, like, I'm surprised that you said you can gauge based off of people showing up in the store, because I imagine from what I've seen, like Mark Rosewater would, for market research, he's the head of Magic, would refer to people who only played at home as the Invisibles, because you don't see them at game stores, you don't see them at tournaments. I feel like the Invisible factor on a game like Marvel Champions, Lord of the Rings, and Arkham would be through the roof. Like, you probably get sales for these games. Like, I think the only games I imagine that you have more Invisibles are Wargamers. Because you keep all those stocked, but like I've never seen a Wargamer in the store. I've only seen like one or two, like Neil, and that's about it.
With Arkham though, like Arkham has a solid group that's here, or you know, even if it's just outside of that, like there are people we just know are committing to it, right? They're basically locked in, and once something comes out, we set those aside for them. I guess like you know, like someone like Harrison or something like that. Like there is. I guess I'm including that in my mind. There isn't like always an Arkham game being played, but between the groups that are around, like there's usually a crew that we know are into that, or they're keeping up on it. I guess the thing would be like a lot of the times with like the Fantasy Flight stuff, you know, the people that are really active in the community for whatever game it is, they're the ones that are coming to us because they keep like. They might even keep stronger tabs on, like, these are the releases for this game system or something like that. Mm-hmm. And as soon as they get as soon as Fantasy Flight announces it, it's typically getting to us at the same time as the customer base, right? So it's, like, a lot of the time if we're not, like, actively seeking out every single game that they have, like, someone's coming to us and asking, like, oh, when's this going to be around? When's this launching? All that sort of stuff, you know? So.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, my final verdict is I absolutely adore Marvel Champions. I don't know. I've got 10, 12, 117 plays, something like that thus far, and I am just thoroughly looking forward to it. Where are you at, Brian?
Yeah, ready to melt face.
That's a thing that's said, right?
Yeah. I say it all the time.
Yeah, okay. Me too.
Where are you, Mason?
I am on a very, very much enjoying it, but it feels like a very wonderful, very shallow pool right now. I am going to play it probably 5 to 10 more times, then I'm going to move back to my Winsome Train games, and then come back as soon as I see Captain Marvel, or Miss Marvel and Captain America rear their heads.
Awesome. Well, that is episode number 140, Avengers Assemble, and yeah, I think that's it for this episode, so until next time, I am your host, The Brand.
Co-host Brian
and Mason.
And until then, we hope you step into the portal.